Listen to the infallible word of God as it is found in Genesis, the first chapter, beginning with the 24th verse, Genesis 1, 24. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures after their kind, cattle and creeping things, beasts of the earth after their kind." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, and the cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." And God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, "Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." And in the 9th chapter of Genesis, we read the first 7 verses. Genesis 9, verse 1. And God blessed Noah and his sons, and said unto them, "Be fruitful, and multiply, and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, and upon every bird of the heavens, with all wherewith the ground teemeth, and all the fishes of the sea, into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be food for you, as the green herb have I given you all. The flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. Surely your blood, the blood of your lives, will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it. At the hand of man, even at the hand of every man's brother, will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. You be fruitful and multiply, and bring forth abundantly in the earth, and multiply therein." And God bless us in this reading of his holy word. Congregation of Christ Jesus, today is Right to Life Sunday, being celebrated in many churches throughout New Jersey, at least, and I hope throughout the nation. But I just wonder how many preachers in the Christian Reformed Church are going to deal with this most significant issue of right to life. This Sunday has come about primarily by the Right to Life Committee. It's a national organization, and this committee arose primarily because of the abortion issue starting back in 1968, but the issue is much broader than abortion. It is right to life from the moment of conception until the moment a person dies. Now, right to life on biblical principles does not speak against war, nor does it speak against capital punishment, because the Bible is not against war. War is good and holy when understood correctly. It is bad and sinful and unholy when Emperor Hirohito, who is in the United States now, declares war on the United States of America in a sneak fashion, or apart from a sneak attack at Pearl Harbor. That is wrong. But it is good and holy and Christian and biblical for a nation to defend itself against unholy, sinful aggression of the Japanese or the Nazis or the communists in China or in Vietnam, going down into Cambodia or South Vietnam or Laos or anywhere that there is an unholy aggression. It is good and biblical and defensible upon the basis of Scripture for a nation to kill, to defend itself. The sixth commandment, "Thou shalt not kill," does not mean that there should be no policemen Romans 13 is clear at that point, that God has given the governments the sword to punish evildoers. Likewise, capital punishment is not wrong. And simply, in the United States, humanism, secularism, a forgetting of God, has swept the entire nation so that now capital punishment is never exercised. That's because the United States of America does not base its thinking on religion. It doesn't base its thinking on God. It doesn't base its thinking on holy, on the Bible. Because Genesis 9 says very clearly, and this has nothing to do with ceremonial law. This is before the ceremonial law. This is dealing with the world as a whole in universal terms after the flood. God comes to Noah and he says very plainly here, whosoever sheds man's blood, by man shall. That means it must be done. I won't say it must be done, but it is a command. Our acceptance is not always compulsory, but it is permissible. It shall be done. By man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. It's just because man is the image of God, is like God, that when somebody kills a man, then Genesis 9, this universal passage that deals with the entire world, not something that's just a simple Jewish ceremonial law, says that we are to take, and we may, permissible to take, a man's life. So when we deal with a matter of right to life, we're not speaking against war, and we're not speaking against capital punishment. But we are speaking of the right to life in every other form, practically, that I can think of, all kinds of examples. And we're thinking of this and basing our thinking not primarily on the Ten Commandments. Now, the Ten Commandments say at this juncture, thou shalt not kill. And so you could argue that this is a basis for the right to life. And that is to a certain extent. Now, usually, when we think of the Ten Commandments, and in particular, the Sixth Commandment, thou shalt not kill, we're thinking of hate. Don't kill somebody. He has a right to life. Don't kill somebody because he is made in the image. He's a person whom we ought to love and we ought not to hate. Now, that is a justifiable interpretation of the Sixth Amendment. Don't kill because you ought not to hate somebody. But there's another way of looking at that. And not only with the Sixth Commandment, but with the biblical passages of Genesis 1 and Genesis 9 that we just read. Another fundamental basis of the Sixth Commandment, thou shalt not kill. Another fundamental basis of the command to have respect for life, reverence for life, right for life, is that man is made in the image of God. Therefore, don't touch him. Now, let that sink through. That's what Genesis 1 tells us very clearly. It says that in the 26th verse, God said, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. And then in the 27th verse, the next verse, it says, and God created man in his own image, and in the image of God, repeats it again, and in the image of God created he him, male and female, created he him. So all human beings are unique characters. We are like God. We are little gods with a small g. There's a big difference between God and us. He's lived from eternity and he's omnipotent, he's made us and we're his creatures, and yet we're in his image. A cow is not like God. Not at all. We are. You are. You're like God. That's great. It's tremendous. We are little gods. And that's what Genesis 9 says also. Don't kill anybody. Because man is made in the image of God. And do you know what's remarkable? Is if you turn to James, the third chapter, in the ninth verse, James 3, 9. James says, don't damn somebody. Don't curse somebody. Don't say, God damn you. Why? Not because you're taking the name of God in vain. Now, that's one basis. But that's not what James 3:9 is saying. James 3:9 is saying, don't do it, because man is made in the image of God. With the same tongue, we bless the Father and we curse man who is made in the image of God. That ought not to be so. You ought not to do those things, says James. Because when you damn a person, that's like damning God, because we are little gods. We're made like God. It's a very remarkable passage for condemning swearing and this popular cursing of one person over against another. Now, this all shows that man is made in the image of God. Man is made like God. You're little gods. Therefore, right to life. Therefore, have reverence for life. Because if you hate somebody, or you hurt somebody, or you take somebody's life away, that's a slap against God. And you are depriving this man. This is not an animal. God says we can have the animals, we can have the vegetables, we can have dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and the animals. We can kill them, we can use them. And you can't exterminate them. We've got to protect them. Ecology is right. Conservation is right. We've got to watch over them and protect the things that God has made. But we may, within moderation, eat fish and have flowers for beauty and so forth. But you can't take a man and do anything you want with him, because he is a little god. He is the image of God. And therefore, you've got to respect him. Have reverence for him. All right, that is the principle. That is the fundamental basis for right to life, for reverence for life. Why we all must respect not animal life, but the image of God. That is the basis. That is the foundation. That's the principle. Now, once you understand that, then let us put it to practice. And so let's look at various examples of how we should put that to practice. Now, first of all, take the Cassius Clay and the Joe Frazier fight of the other night. Frankly, I was sorry that Cassius Clay, the loud-mouthed baddie, won over the goodie, Joe Frazier. I wanted Frazier to win because of his personality. He's a much nicer, kinder, less of a braggart than this man who goes by the alias of Muhammad Ali. Cassius Clay is his real name. Now, this boxing was wrong. You may not do that. The reason being that when you go into at least professional boxing, there is a violence done to the image of God. And you can't do that. Now, this is not the same as baseball or football, where the main purpose is not to kill somebody and not to maim them and hurt them. But in boxing, the main purpose is to hurt that image of God. So, as you know, the brain is a very fragile element within the hard skull. And these punches that come so hard shake the brain against the casing in which it is in, and it damages it. And that's why many fighters become punch drunk, because a certain portion of their brain has been hurt, hit, damaged, and therefore they slur their speech, their walk. Their image, the image of God, has been partially destroyed in them. Furthermore, on the average, 10 boxes a year throughout the world are killed. Now, that may not seem large, and yet when you consider that this is a sport that's not engaged in, well, I wouldn't call it a sport, but whatever it is, a competition, and where you have only 2 people involved, it's not a question of a football where you get 22 people involved, and there are all kinds of high schools and colleges and professional teams throughout the world of soccer and so forth playing, you have so many people involved, but when you consider that you have only a very small number in the professional world, and that's where they really are, well, also the amateur world to a certain extent, where they're getting killed. Therefore, when you find that there are 10 killed per year throughout the world on the average, this is just not permissible. That person may not, before God, he has no right to engage in this sort of a thing and destroy the image of God. To go to another example, think of the automobile and the common figures, which vary, but close to 50,000 people in the United States are killed every year. So that in 20 years' time, that means 1 million people in the United States are killed. 1 million people in 20 years' time by the automobile. This is not talking about the injured. 1.5 million people are killed every year, are injured every year by the automobile. And look what that is in a period of 20 years' time. 30 million people who are injured. A lot of this comes because of speed and because of alcohol. Incidentally, in the last 20 years, from 1953 to 1973, the consumption of alcohol in the United States has increased per person 90%. That's dramatic, 90%. And I'm afraid that too many Christian Reformed people, they think it's sort of smart. You know, you're really in. When you can say, well, you've had a beer and so forth. Well, you're on the wrong track when you, I know, Jesus drank. I know, wine at the Lord's Supper. But with the situations we're in today, with the problem of alcoholism, I don't mean getting drunk. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about alcoholism, which you become a victim of it. And you just cannot resist it. And you destroy your own image. Anybody who's drunk destroys the image of God for the time being. And I think it's dangerous to be playing with this. And 50% of the fatalities in automobile accidents, drinking has been involved. Well, so that should speak to us. Just this week, I saw figures, authoritative figures, how that last, in the winter of 74, when there was the a gasoline shortage, there was a dramatic, and that is the exact term that was used, a dramatic drop in deaths. Not only, now we're not talking about deaths caused by automobiles hitting each other, automobile accidents, we're not talking about that. That was true too. We're talking about a dramatic drop in deaths of heart and chronic lung diseases and other diseases related. But these are the two that were highlighted. And there are all kinds of factors involved that had to be checked out. But there was a dramatic drop in deaths at this time because there was a gasoline shortage and people just were not traveling as much as they could. The automobile is an abomination to a certain extent because of ecology, of the destruction of natural environment and life, as well as the killing of 1 million people in 20 years' time, as well as all of these other problems that have been mentioned just by this recent survey. And so a Christian, because man is made in the image of God, he will exercise caution. He will keep a long distance between himself and the car in front of him. That will cut down and a lot of deaths. And there you'll have respect for life. And there is something very concrete, keeping that big distance. Of course, he won't drink at all before he travels. And he'll have respect for the other person. He will practice the golden rule of driving, that do unto those who drive against you as you would have them do as they drive against you. So if we have respect for life, we will be careful and will not engage in boxing. We'll be exceptionally cautious in the area of the automobile. To take a third example, this may not involve anybody here, I hope not, and probably not, but nevertheless we ought to know what we think about it. I'm thinking about suicides. Before God, it is wrong to commit suicide. God owns our body. God owns us. And we're made in the image of God. And we have no right to take this image, which God has created, and do away with it. People do this out of despondency. Every year in the United States, about 225,000 people take their lives. The psychiatrists estimate that 8 times as many attempt to take their lives. Now, I don't think that suicide is the unpardonable sin. Don't think it for a second. I think that's something entirely different. And I think Christians have taken their lives. They ought not to have taken their lives, but they have. I think unbelief is the basic sin. And I think that Christians sometimes can be so distorted in their thinking. They can still believe in Jesus Christ and yet wrongfully take their lives. They ought not to do it, but they do. One who is a non-Christian, he'll take his life because he can't cope with life here. He's running away, but that's never going to solve the problem, simply because if he's a non-Christian, he's going to jump from the frying pan right into the fire. He's going to go right into hell eternally, and he's going to not escape his problems at all. So a non-Christian, there's no hope of turning to Jesus Christ once you have left this life. Now is the only time that you can accept Jesus Christ. So it's most foolhardy for a person who's not a Christian to ever take his life, and even a Christian ought not to do it. The reason a person ought not to do it is because man is made in the image of God. This is something holy, and we have no right to take that away from God. Let's go to another example. Now, I speak softly, kindly, recognizing that some of you smoke. And I realize it's a touchy subject. But the task of the preacher is to preach the Bible, say what he thinks. So I'll tell you what I think. You know all the statistics, so there's no need of repeating them. But the surveys done repeatedly, again and again and again, by different bodies, by the government, by the state government, by the national government, by not only the United States, by other governments, by private doctors, private associations, all, without exception, except for the tobacco industry, every single one comes up with the same conclusion. So it's a matter of degrees, but if a person is 20 years of age, smokes a pack of cigarettes a day, the statistics are that his life, on the average, will be shortened by 5 years. It's not only lung cancer, it's everything. Heart disease, emphysema, women pregnant, hurting their children, the unborn babies. All kinds of things are involved. It's so bad that the United States requires in the advertising, that familiar thing which nobody reads, that is dangerous. So, for your health. So you got the beautiful people involved smoking, and then down some little corner which nobody reads, you have the warning. In Great Britain, I was in Scotland 2 summers ago, and at the University of St. Andrews, there was a conference on the nurses under the medical program of Great Britain, and they were there, smoking away and so forth. And so I said to them, "You are nurses. You know what is involved?" And they say, "Oh, whenever we smoke, we simply turn this cigarette, that's flip it over with that pack." And, you know, they just become calloused and indifferent to these things. Now, if man is made in the image of God, the Christian, nobody, but especially the Christian, who loves God, who has been saved by Jesus Christ, he has no right to take 5 years away from God. God puts us here to enjoy this life, to have a good time, but also to work, and we have a responsibility to him. And I realize it's difficult to stop. The least the Christian can do is this: to acknowledge and recognize that cigarette smoking is wrong, is sinful, is harmful, that nobody should engage in it. That's the least we can do as Christians. Recognize what's right, I'm wrong. Then we recognize that it's difficult to overcome. Sure, a lot of people want to quit, and they can't do it. At least set the goal. That's the first step in life, always. Don't kid ourselves. Be firm about it. The goal is to cut out entirely. And then ask God for the ability to overcome, and then try these many programs. You hear advertising on the radio, so forth and so on, of helping you to overcome. Use human means to do it. But at least set the goal. And maybe we can't do it overnight, but at least we ought to know what's right and wrong. And it's sinful and wrong for a person to go on blithely, uncaringly, in the matter of smoking cigarettes. I say cigarettes because I guess the statistics haven't been so strong on pipe and cigars, and I just don't know what the figures are on that. All right, let's move off into another area, which affects almost all of us, and that's the area of overeating. Now, this is the favorite pastime in America, and especially of Christians. God has been good to us. He gives us, there are certain things that are necessary in life, such as to eat, and God makes it pleasurable and gives us good things. And Christ also, we go to banquets and enjoy good and fine food. I mean, there's nothing wrong in that. But when we, as Americans, and all Americans, are overweight, all of us, we all can take off. And the simple statistics are, from the life insurance people, who are very much interested in the Dalai. They are the ones who know. They're the ones who have a reason to study this problem of overweight and longevity. They're the ones who tell us how our lives are shortened when we are overweight. 10 pounds. I'm not talking about 50 pounds. Sure, 50 pounds, much worse. 10 pounds is also going to take off. And so, again, we should have respect for life. We should have a reverence for life, for ourselves. And we should cultivate now good habits in kids. Anybody who is 16 years of age and over, he's developed habits of eating, and it's awfully difficult to eradicate him at that stage. The time to teach a child is when he's 3 and 4, and not keep encouraging them. Snacks in between meals and overeating and piling it on. They've got to develop good habits, and this is what the Bible is telling us. In Genesis 1, Genesis 9, that man is made in the image of God, and that when we become overweight, we have real problems. Now let's go to two other problems in application of this, and one is the matter of euthanasia. Now that is the next big social crisis that's going to come in the United States of America. We've already lost the abortion issue. Now is going to come the matter of euthanasia. And this is a very difficult issue. And it's going to come to a crisis, of course, with the Quinlan child in New Jersey. And we've got to wrestle with it, and I don't know what the answers are entirely. Of course, here is an unusual case of a girl who has been unconscious for so long. She's being fed intravenously, and the doctors unanimously do not give her any hope. There are brain waves going on. The heart is beating. She's breathing. These are usually the signs that a person is alive, especially now they consider this matter of the electrical waves going out from the brain. Now, what should you do in her case? It's very easy to say, pull out the plug, and I guess I'm inclined to say in that case, but I could be wrong, that you ought not to go to these heroic, extraordinary means when the doctors unanimously say that there is no hope. But I don't know, so I hesitate to pontificate at that point. But as in the case of abortion, when the abortion issue came to the front, they always brought up the dramatic cases of a girl who was raped by a black and so forth and so on. That was a false, hypocritical reason given by the liberals in the United States of America to get what they really wanted, because that example I gave hardly ever occurs, and pregnancy never occurs from rape. Maybe it does, but the statistics are that it almost never occurs. That's not the reason why the liberal abortionists wanted abortion. They wanted to kill the babies because it just wasn't convenient. So, the trick of the liberal, the hypocritical, so-called beautiful liberals, is to take this extreme case, and once they've won that, the right to abortion because of this extreme case, the million which are killed today because of abortion, and not because of rape, it's because I just didn't want to do it. It just wasn't convenient to have a baby. So likewise, with euthanasia, the liberal is going to hop onto the Quinlan case. And that's going to be the one that is held up, and therefore we should have the right to die. But the simple facts are that that Quinlan case is a 1 in a million. That doesn't occur. There are all kinds of degrees. And I'm talking about the vast other majorities, the people who are just too tired. And they want to have the right to die. Well, they don't have the right to die. God has the right to take away their life. We do not have the right to take away their life. They are made in the image of God, and we've got to be extremely cautious about this. Now to go to the area of abortion. Think of the tragedy in the United States of America. Think of the time before Jesus Christ, when infanticide was practiced. Abortions were practiced. And if a baby was born and they didn't like it, they'd simply take the baby out on the hillside and expose it. Practice infanticide. Christianity has come along, and by its leavening influence, over 2,000 years, gradually, Christianity has permeated Italy, France, Western Europe, North America, South America. And because of the leavening influence of Christianity, Christians have recognized, as the Christian Reformed Church has done twice now in its synodical pronouncements, Christianity has recognized that abortion, except to save the life of the mother, which is an academic issue, doesn't occur these days because of medical advances, but except for the life of the mother, Christianity has declared universally that abortion is wrong. So for 2,000 years, there's been this permeating, leavening, good influence of Christianity. And now, within just a couple of years, beginning in 1968, then with the abominable Supreme Court decision of January 22nd, 1973, three men, that's all it was, majority in the Supreme Court, three men changed the laws which have been in the United States up until this time. Congress didn't change them. The states didn't change them. Three men, Douglas included, who ought to retire because he's incapacitated mentally to continue on the court these days, takes all these liberal causes, unbiblical ones. Three men overturned 2,000 years of the leavening influence of Christianity. So now people say, oh, the courts allow it, the government allows it, that's a Chilton hospital. We picketed outside Chilton Hospital, other hospitals, practicing abortion. They say, well, the government allows it. Sure, the government allows prostitution in Nevada. Doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean Chilton Hospital has to practice it. So the government allows it. The government ought not to allow it any more than it ought to allow infanticide. What in all the world is the difference between a baby one day old and a baby one day before birth in the womb? How about the Dr. Edelin case in Boston? Now, the jury made the right decision, but that's being appealed. By the time it gets to the Supreme Court will overthrow it. And the Edelin case. Here is a black baby that is born. What in all the world is the difference between that black baby after it was born and before it was born? It's still a human being. It still has eyes, eyebrows, a heart, a soul. It is the image of God. That little baby was a little God. And the Dr. Edelin who killed it was a killer. He killed the image of God. And so you go back 1 month before birth. That's not the image of God? Of course it's the image of God. Where does human life begin? I'm convinced at the moment of conception. The time the sperm and the ovum unite, there is the image of God. I say this upon the basis of the Bible, which tells us, such as in Psalm 51, in sin did my mother conceive me. Now that does not mean that the process of begetting was sinful. That's talking about original sin. That we are not only born in sin, as the baptismal form says, but we are conceived from the moment of conception. We are the image of God and we are in sin. We are under God's wrath because of the sin of Adam. Romans 5. Jesus Christ was man and God. And Jesus Christ was man not only from December 25th on, not only from the moment of birth on, but Jesus, according to Matthew 1 and Luke 1, was conceived by the Holy Spirit and born of the Virgin Mary. And when Mary was 3 months pregnant, Jesus wasn't one-third man and 100% God. Jesus has always been 100% God and 100% man from the moment of conception. He didn't gradually grow to become a man so that Mary was 6 months pregnant, so Jesus was then two-thirds a man. We have always confessed, and the church has always held, that Jesus was man and God, not from the 25th of December, but from the moment of conception. So likewise, we are like Jesus in all points, sin excepted. And as Jesus was conceived and born as a man and was completely human at the moment of conception, even though, you know, so also we are the same. You know, even though at the moment of conception, it doesn't have recognizable human features, it's still growing. All the science tells us
that the color of the hair, all the genetic conditions have all been established. They aren't going to be changed. Whether it's a boy, going to be a boy or a girl, or the blue eyes, or blonde, or redhead. I mean, all things have been coded in there. The image of God is right there at the moment of conception, and not later on at the time of birth. And so the United States kills now 1 million people every single year by abortion. This is abominable. 2 weeks ago, Senator Birch Bayh, who hopes to become President of the United States of America, refused to even allow, we're trying to get a human life amendment passed to the Constitution. In order for that to be passed, it's got to go through Congress first. In order to go through Congress, the Senate has a special committee which has to discuss it and then pass it on to Congress. And Senator Birch Bayh refused to even allow this to be discussed by his colleagues in the Senate. So likewise, Ted Kennedy and the others feel the same way. James Buckley and the others from New York City, they have taken a good stand. And so 2,000 years of history has been overturned. Hopeful presidential candidates like Senator Birch Bayh refused to even let us hold on to the traditional American Christian position of the right to life. Well, it's time that the Christian Reformed Church speaks up. And the Christian Reformed Church has spoken up. And we spoke up very decisively upon this point. And now it's time for you to get involved in right to life.